your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by.
We're still talking about this shocking scandal. Operation Varsity Blues, it's called. 50 people, including Hollywood stars, top CEOs, college coaches, test administrators, were involved in the scheme, allegedly. 8 universities named in the indictment. The fallout is shattering. There's all kinds of class action lawsuits potentially costing billions of dollars to the players. And, you know, the question is, should we be in shock? Or given this recent epidemic of what we call helicopter parenting, and that is the people who, parents who micromanage and steer and overprotect and hover and control their kids' lives and activities and, yes, school choices and admissions. Is this something that is a natural consequence of what's going on? And with us to talk about this phenomenon is New York Times bestseller of the book, How to Raise an Adult, Break Free of the Overparenting Trap and Prepare Your Kids for Success by Julie Lithcott-Hames. Welcome to the show, Julie. Hi, how are you?
I'm well, Karen. Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be in Chicagoland. I'm originally from Wisconsin, a couple hours north, although I'm a Californian now. So it's just great to hear your voice and to connect with the great people in Chicago.
You can feel the chill from there, I can tell.
I can.
Well, I'm looking at your resume. And okay, Bachelor of Arts from Stanford, law degree from Harvard, Master's in Fine Arts. And I just think, like, how much would you have had to pay to buy those entrances? Did you ever think about that? No, just all kidding aside, you surprised by this, given the book that you have and the talks that you have made about this very issue about parents pushing their kids into college?
The first thing I'm going to say is I'm a black woman. And so I know firsthand from having grown up with the rhetoric that most people think it's us, the black and brown people, who are, quote unquote, taking spots from white folks. That's the rhetoric I grew up with. And I think this week we all woke up to the fact that if anybody is stealing spots, it's the uber wealthy folks, the vast majority of whom are white, who are literally lying, cheating, and stealing to get their kids whatever they think is important by way of college. It is an extension of helicopter parenting. It is the ultimate extension. Parents who I'm calling now drone parents. The parent is the drone. They're picking up the package, which is the child, and delivering that package, the child, to the desired future, the right college. And, of course, then it'll be the right career. That child is an inanimate object. They are literally doing nothing to get themselves there. And if you can afford it, you know, and you don't have any ethics, fine, you're doing it. But let me tell you, it robs that young person of the sense that they're capable of doing anything. It damages their mental health. We may not want to think compassionately toward these kids because they're so overprivileged and wealthy, but I'm here to tell you, no matter what your social class, when you are overmanaged like this, it harms your mental health. You literally do not have the skills to do for yourself, and your psyche, psychologically, inside, you know, hey, I probably can't do anything without my parents attending my every move.
So, Julie, if you can, and just play this game with me, you know these parents. You've seen that you were the freshman dean at Stanford. You're a lawyer. You've practiced law. Get yourself in the head of these parents who have paid $500,000, $6 million, whatever it is, to get their kids in. What would their justification be? How would you say, Karen, this is why I did this?
Well, Karen, I would never do this, and you would never do this, but this is why they're doing it. These are parents with tremendous privilege, right? They can already buy their way into everything. We've learned that. So why do they feel the need to get their kid to a highly selective brand name college? They're already setting their kid up for life. It can't be about, oh, I want to give them access to a better network of people. They've already got the network.
Right.
So why are they doing it? For their own ego. Their own ego. This is keeping up with the Joneses, Hollywood style. Keeping up with the Joneses, Silicon Valley style, whatever the community is. It's, I need that sticker for the back of my car with the right college on it so I can impress all my friends and all the drivers behind me with how amazing I am. I mean, my kid is, right? It's ego. It's purely ego. If I want to be able to brag at SoulCycle or Starbucks or on the golf course or wherever I hang out with the people I feel are judging me, I need to kind of ruffle my feathers and say, my child is at whatever the school is.
Interesting. You know, let's talk about helicopter parenting, because this phenomenon is interesting because it's not just one parent, two parents. Once in a while, this happens. It seems like there was a whole group of people that raised children all in the same way. And I watched it from all different sides. My friends raising children this way, where they couldn't even go on a vacation without their adult children calling them and asking them to how to turn on the dishwasher. I mean, things like that. They were not capable of doing things on their own. Can you give us some like societal bullet points, and you deal with this in your book, of how did we get to have helicopter parents?
How did we get here?
Yes.
Well, it all began in the 1980s when baby boomers were raising kids and things really began to change. And there's a beautiful irony because baby boomers were so concerned with having their own voice as young adults. They're the generation that turned out to rob their own kids of having a voice. Here's what happened. In the 80s, the play date was born by baby booming parents. Self-esteem movement was born, ribbons and trophies just for being on the team, not for being any good. Stranger danger was born, the concept of you might get abducted on any street corner, which is really a fallacy in terms of the actual statistics, but we've just let that theory bore itself into the minds of Americans. And a couple other things happened. We got a lot safer in cars with seatbelts and car seats, and then on bicycles with bike helmets. We became safer. We began hovering over play and on the sidelines of kids' activities and keeping an eye on them in the grocery store. I mean, just parents were constantly managing, micromanaging, hovering over kids. And there's a short-term win to all of this. It looks like it helps, right? I prevented my child from falling off the swing at the playground because I was at the swing, right? I got my kid an A in the math class, which means they're going to get into a better math class next year. But long-term cost is the kid can't do anything for themselves because you've basically been their handler or their concierge. And it harms their mental health because you've basically told them, hey, kids, you're not capable of succeeding in the fourth grade. I have to do your homework for you. Hey, kid, you're never going to make it into college on your own merits. I have to lie, cheat, and steal on your behalf to get you in. So there's a long-term cost, even though there's a short-term gain. And I think we're only just beginning to appreciate the long-term cost.
Has this phenomenon diminished at all? Or are we seeing, was it on the upswing and now is it going down? Or do we still have parents who are doing the same thing?
Well, I got to tell you, my book came out close to 4 years ago. Wow. And in the beginning, so this would have been summer of 2015, spring of 2015, parents would be very defensive with me. And I came, I've had a wonderful set of visits to Chicagoland over the years. And actually, Chicago parents were the least defensive.
Oh.
Everywhere else, people were like, yeah, we know, we're just doing what we have to do to get our kid into the right college. The Chicago parents were saying, yep, we know this is a problem. What do we do about it? And I loved it. And so what I've seen change in the 4 years is a lot less defensive. Everybody knows someone in their town, in their school, in their own family who's been overparented. You can see the effects. You see those 20-somethings who are rebounding back home, who can't seem to kind of make a plan their day, get tasks accomplished, or, you know, have a job, talk with strangers. Turn on the dishwasher, right? Make a simple meal. And everyone knows somebody, right? And so when we see the evidence, that makes us go, okay, I don't want my kid to end up like that. What do I need to do to dial back all of my intervention so my kid can start doing more for themselves? But I think until you realize the harm, the arms race is just continuing. And that's what this week's news is an indication of. Like, did anyone think this was happening? This literally, you know, people lying and cheating and stealing their way in. You know, this seems to be the nth degree of helicopter parenting. But if we don't turn this around in 5 years, I don't know what it'll be. I mean, it'll be parents paying off high school teachers and bribing coaches K through 12. I don't know. I mean, there's an ethical vacuum here. Parents thinking, I got to do whatever it takes to get my kid in, to get my kid to the future I want them to have. And, of course, what we're missing is, no. Your job as a parent is to put yourself out of a job. One day, like it or not, you'll be dead, and your offspring has to be able to fend without you. And that's the ultimate reckoning. These kids who are over-attended, over-managed, over-helped will be bewildered when their parents are finally incapacitated or gone and cannot do everything for them any longer.
Can you hold with us a little bit, Julie? We're going to take a break, and I want to talk a little bit more specifically about the college situation. You're listening to Julie Lithcott-Hames, author of the book How to Raise an Adult. It's available on all fine bookstores, a New York Times bestseller, and we're going to talk a little bit more when we return. It's the Karen Conti Show on WGN.
But here's the good news. contrary to what the college rankings racket would have us believe. You don't have to go to one of the biggest brand name schools to be happy and successful in life. Happy and successful people went to a state school, went to a small college no one has heard of, went to community college, went to a college over here and flunked out. The evidence is in this room, is in our communities, that this is the truth. And if we could widen our blinders and be willing to look at a few more colleges, maybe remove our own egos from the equation, we could accept and embrace this truth and then realize it is hardly the end of the world if our kids don't go to one of those big brand name schools. And more importantly, if their childhood has not been lived according to a tyrannical checklist, then when they get to college, whichever one it is, well, they'll have gone there on their own volition, fueled by their own desire, capable and ready to thrive there.
We're listening to Julie Lipcott-Hames, the author of How to Raise an Adult. Oh, that was really stirring. That was awe-inspiring.
Thank you, Karen.
And of course,
I did that talk some time ago.
I know, but it's so timely. It was almost like you were prophetic in your words here. So let's talk a little bit specifically about, you know, Texter just texted and said, how do these kids do, the kids that maybe the parents did their homework and got the glue gun out and did their projects for them and got them into a school one way or the other, how do these kids do in college? Are they succeeding to what you've seen?
Well, based on what I've seen, kids who had that much help in high school require that much help in college. So if you've always pulled out the glue gun, when your kid has to pull out the glue gun in college, they really are quite worried about whether they're going to be able to complete the assignment as expected without your help. So maybe you're not flying out to use the glue gun, but you're on the phone with them, talking them through how to do it. If you've always edited their essays, not just provided feedback, hey, feedback is great, but when you've rewritten their essay for them, then they're afraid they can't turn in that paper in college without your bringing out your red pen and, telling them how to restructure it or to rewrite it. So effectively, the helicoptering doesn't stop. Once you've bought yourself this role of being your kid's handler or enabler or concierge, it's kind of a lifetime job because they are not capable. They don't feel capable either.
You talk in your book about a checklisted childhood. Can you tell our listeners what you mean by that?
Sure thing. Wherever you are, depending on where you are, it's slightly different, but it's sort of the right school. Now, where I live in Palo Alto, that starts in preschool. In some places, that concept of the right school doesn't start till high school or maybe even college, but it's that sense of I got to get my kids to start out at the right school, wherever that is. And then it's the right grades at the right school, the right classes. So it's not just any class. It's got to be in the best classes, getting all A's at the best school. And then that's just the start of it. Then it's the standardized tests and making sure that our kid, if we have the means, by the way, this is all a function of means, Karen. This is parents who are at least middle class, if not upper middle class and beyond, because you got to have means to cultivate your kid's childhood like this. So it's test prep, test prep, test prep, take the SAT or the ACT, maybe take them both, take them again, perfect your test. The test scores are a function of your ability to have studied for them and retaken them. They're basically a function of wealth. Okay, grades and scores, and then it's the accolades they're supposed to have to impress the admission dean, and all the awards you're supposed to have, and all the sports you're supposed to do, and all the activities, and all the leadership, and then the community service, which is usually the big joke at the end, like go to some third world country and say you helped out for a week. And when there are people suffering in your own hometown, so that's the checklist of childhood. It's all the things the child must do in order to get into the quote unquote right college. And because it's not just doing those things, but doing them flawlessly, that overparenting is required. We're basically asking our kids to be more accomplished, more capable, to stuff their childhoods with more stuff than was ever asked of us, those of us who are, at least probably 40 or older.
Now, your book seems to indicate that the kids are who go to the top schools, I mean, certainly you get into a good school, and certainly it's a wonderful thing to get an Ivy League education. But is there some study that shows, do these people actually make more money long term, maybe right out of law school? You're hired out of Harvard at $175,000 in a New York firm, whereas if you're at a lower tier school, you might be making $100,000 or maybe a little less, certainly at the beginning. But long term, is there some idea that kids that go to these schools are more earn more income?
There is no evidence of that. And in fact, there's evidence that if you're a smart, hardworking person who was in the running to be admitted to one of those places, but you didn't go there, you went somewhere else, your income 20 years later was no different from the kids who did go to those elite brand places. The research boils down to it's the kid, not the school. It's who you are and how you behave when you show up at college, not the brand name of the college, that determines whether you're going to be successful. You made an interesting point that you alluded to lawyers making money out of grad school. Choosing a grad school is really different than choosing a college. When you're going to grad school, you do want to try to attend one of the top schools in your field. This is often not brand name as much as just the ranking of their quality, because those employers, whether it's an investment bank or a law firm, they want to know you went to one of the top grad schools, because that's where, you know, they perceive the best education is. Here's proof that you don't have to go to a top college to go to a top law school. The Harvard Law School class of 2016, I looked at them for the book I was writing, How to Raise an Adult. 540 students in the class of 2016 at Harvard Law, they came from 171 different colleges. Most of us can't name 30 colleges, let alone 171, but Harvard Law School knows, hey, there's excellence to be had at all of these colleges that we just recruited students from. And my point is, if 171 colleges are good enough for Harvard Law School, can't they be good enough for you?
Absolutely. We only have a couple minutes left, but I in your book, you talk about their Harvard grant study, which was a study that was done, and let's just boil it down. You kind of address two different findings that were very telling on how to raise your kids to be good kids in the long run. Can you tell our listeners quickly about those things?
Yeah, so this is a study, but one of the longest studies of humans ever conducted through the decades of the lives of these humans they studied. And one key finding was that the people who were professionally successful in life turned out to have done chores as a kid or had a part-time job in high school, because chores or part-time job in high school builds a work ethic, teaches a kid, roll up your sleeve, be useful, pitch in, don't wait to be served, ask how can I contribute my effort to make the situation better. Another finding from that study showed that happiness in life equals loving relationships with other humans. The more we have love in our lives, the happier we will be. So our kids have to be loved unconditionally at home, not as a function of their GPA or their test scores, but simply love for who they are, so that they can love themselves and then go out into the world and give and receive love. Right now, our kids feel conditionally loved if they're doing well. We act as if we want them to be someone else. We have to love the actual kid we've got and take an interest in helping them get stronger at what they're good at, rather than trying to make them into the child we wish they'd be if only they were more perfect or only more like the child we had in our dreams.
If you have just a couple of quick takeaways for parents who are out there who may be guilty of some of the stuff that we're talking about, how is it that, you know, give us some good bromides for the future here?
Yeah. Let me say this, Karen. I was a helicopter parent. I am a helicopter parent. Working with other people's kids at the college level helped me see what I was doing at home to my own. So whatever, I may sound brash here to your listeners, but I'm coming from a place of I totally own it, that I'm in it, and I get it. The three things you can stop doing tomorrow: stop saying we if you mean your kid. We're on the soccer team. No, you're not. We have a midterm tomorrow. No, you don't. You've had algebra. It's their turn. Number two, stop arguing with all the authority figures in their lives. Teachers, principals, heads of school, coaches, referees, umpires are all under assault by us parents who think we have to argue every single point. Instead, teach your kid to advocate for themselves to authority figures with respect. That's a skill they need to learn. Number three, stop doing their homework. Nobody in Chicagoland, I'm sure, but nearby, other people are doing their kids' homework to try to get them the advantage, and it's unethical, and teachers don't know what kids know anymore, and the kid thinks they're incompetent because you're doing their work. Those are three things you can stop doing tomorrow or, you know, next week if you want to take a week to just sort of get right with it.
That's right. That's right. Julie, thank you so much for joining us. I know I'm going to call upon you again to come in. And if you're ever in Chicago, you're going to come by the studio and we're going to have a lively conversation. Julie Lithcott-Hames, the author of a book you have to read, whether you're hiring millennials or you're raising a millennial still, or you're raising children now, How to Raise an Adult, Break Free of the Overparenting Trap and Prepare Your Kid for Success, available at all bookstores, Amazon, etc. Thank you, Julie, for joining us.
Karen, thank you for having me. Always great to be with the great folks in Chicago. Bye.
Okay, take care. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show on WGN. Coming up, the stories that matter with Roger Badish from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.